Jai Ma, since Anubhav, you have spoken about the disturbance, so I am suddenly reminded of a story from the Bhagavad Puran, after which we will continue further. So as we all know that river Saraswati dried up. So one of the reasons why it dried up is said that she was making too much noise while Ganesha ji was writing the Mahabharata. So both Vedvyas ji and Lord Ganesh told her to keep quiet, but she would not. And it is said that that was the reason why she dried up. This is just to say how, you know, what kind of interconnecting links are there. But coming back to the Bhagavad Puran, so last time we spoke something about the supreme reality which is described in the Bhagavad Puran. And this is amazing because this question does occur to many. It used to come to me also, that if the reality is just an impersonal Brahman or whatever, then what is the origin of personality? Then we'll have to say that personality has emerged by some kind of random chance, accident of nature, which is how it is all described. Ultimately, in illusionism, it's all a play of Maya. But where is this Maya coming from? We do not know. I mean, there are different theories about it. So the Bhagavad Puran says that beyond the immanent God or the divine presence, and beyond the immutable Brahman, that means Shar and Akshar, there is the Supreme Being. So Supreme Being is a Godhead with, in fact, it describes a vision of the Supreme Being. The Bhagavad describes that if you see him, you will see him with 1,000 arms and limbs and 1,000 eyes in every direction. So it may look fantastic. But here is Shurabindo's experience. So we'll just read that. And this experience Shurabindo has, he has written in one of his poems. The name of the poem is Krishna. It's in Critics, that meter. And he describes the Supreme Godhead of the Bhagavad Puran, if you want to put it very specifically. Because he's describing the personality of the Supreme Godhead. And how he describes, O immense light and thou, O spirit wide, boundless space, whom have you clasped and hid? Deathless limbs, gloried face, vainly lies space and time, void are we, there is none. So there is, you know, nothingness. There is nothing beyond. That's how there is a whole way of looking at the ultimate reality. That it's nothingness. Beyond it, there is no being. There is nothing like God. It's all your imagination. Man has constructed all these theories apart. But the actual experience, because we can logically talk about it, but right now just the experience. Vainly strives self and world. Now, self is with a capital S. The Atman, the Brahman, vainly strives self and world, crying, I alone. So what is the discovery? One is there, self of self. This is the Paramatma or the super soul. Self of self, soul of space, fount of time, heart of hearts, mind of minds, he alone sits sublime. So every aspect of ours derives itself or draws itself from the personality of the Supreme Godhead. This is what last time we were talking about. And therefore it can be transformed. Because if there was no such correspondence, we are a limited edition of that. It's like a child is a limited edition of the parent. And therefore he can grow up into its own adulthood. If it was just something appearing magically, then it would have been disconnected. So that's how it is. Oh, and when he grows into a parent, it does not annul anything. It only makes his relationship with the world much better, much more, proper. So that's the whole journey. Oh, no void absolute, self-absorbed, splendid mute. So it's not just a void that you experience in trance. Hands that clasp, hold, and red lips that kiss, blow the flute. Actually, if you read the description, it's in the original Bhagavad Puran, you will see, my God, Shurvindu has had this experience and he is describing it. All he loves, all he moves, all are his, all are he. Many limbs, now you see the description of thousand. Many limbs sate his whims, bear his sweet ecstasy. Two in one, two who know difference rich in sense, two to clasp, one to be. This is strange mystery. Now we'll not go into this poem, otherwise the whole class will be on the poem. We have done this. This, of course, wonderful, super wonderful. So this is how he describes. So now when creation is described in the Puranas, repeatedly we'll see, and specifically in the Bhagavad Purana, we'll see that there are two kinds of creations. Last time we talked about it. One is which is a direct emanation, we may say, from the one consciousness. So we have in that typal worlds, gods, titans, many other beings. So they are direct. Because this question people ask, what was the reason for all this? God has to create in his image. He can directly create photocopies. Why he wants this process? No, it cannot be like that. Because the moment the differentiating power of the supermind acts, each aspect it differentiates. So each aspect will become a godhead. Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh and Krishna himself. And then each of them will become many, many, many aspects. So each of them will be fixed. They cannot be evolved further because they will disturb the whole evolutionary process. And we'll talk about it a little later. But there is also the Jivatma, which is also emerging from the divine. And that goes into inconscient and evolves through a long passage. So there are two kinds of beings that exist, or rather three kinds at any point of time in creation. One is the evolutionary beings, which are like us, the Jivatma, which goes into darkness, evolved. Now this has the potential to become completely the same to same, the divine, but at an individual basis. This is the extreme experiment, the ultimate possibility. So this is the evolutionary beings. And then there are the typal beings. Typal beings are beings in the world, the gods, the demons, the titans, and many other midworlds. And we'll have a lot of occasion to speak about them because there are plenty of stories which talk about these beings and their influence upon earth. And then there is very interesting, the mother at one place very interestingly says, I have not heard anyone say this, though it is described in the Puranas, but the term is not used. You know, there will be questions. Like if you read the story of Rishi Vasishth and August, how they were born. So you'll wonder, what kind of a process is this? What are they describing? Is it possible? Or for that matter, Narad Muni. So Narad Muni is described as the son of mental child of Brahma. So if he is a mental child of Brahma, there is also the story that he is born as a human being, which we'll talk today, because it's there in the Bhagavad. So what are these two things now? So there are involutionary beings. They are the rishis. And at least two examples which are very clear is, one is Narad Muni, another possibly Swami Vivekananda. And they are beings which exist in the higher planes, the seven rishis. They guide the world and sometimes they take a human body because they have to manifest something to help mankind. So we are not alone just evolving up. There are these beings who come upon earth, like Shobindo spoke about Dhuman Bhai, that he is a rishi from the Vedic age. So there are beings of that kind who are from the higher worlds who take a human body time to time. And then there is the avatar himself and the vibhutis. So avatar is a wonderful mystery. He doesn't come just in the category of evolutionary beings of the higher consciousness, and we'll speak about it when the appropriate time comes. But then there are the avatars of the Lord and there are anshavatars. Anshavatars embody something of the divine. It's a soul which has been prepared by its evolution to a point where the person is possessed by the divine. That's how the Gita describes the liberated, evolved soul as he can become Brahmabhut. He can be full of the divine consciousness. And one example which the Bhagavad doesn't mention because he had not yet come that time is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Aurobindo confirms that he was a partial incarnation of Sri Krishna. So there are these Ansh avatars, and we were reading about the Ansh avatars, in which we read about, you know, the Varaha avatar, and then among the Ansh avatar and the total list, if you see, there are 18 of them, which is both Ansh avatars as well as, you know, one by one the avatars. Krishna is supposed to be the Purna avatar because he embodies all the 16 members which we spoke about last time. What are those 16 members? 16 Kala. Now, we have the story of another Ansh avatar, one of them who is Dattatreya. So, Dattatreya is regarded as Adi Guru. Very fascinating. Why is he Adi Guru? So, as the story goes about Dattatreya's birth, that once, and this is the story which the mother had seen as a movie, and then she remarked, very true, she laughed and she said, yes, only human beings are capable of loving like this. Gods cannot love like this. And then she was asked, why, mother? She said, because they don't have the psychic being. Because human beings grow through all the, you know, challenges of evolution. That's why God favors our humanity. It's something very special. We don't realize it. So, as the story goes, that both Atri Rishi and his wife Anusuya, they are, Anusuya means without jealousy. Her love is free from all jealousy. That's what Anusuya means. So Atri Rishi and Anusuya are aspiring to have a child, which will be embodying all the three, Trimurtis together. So the gods have to make sure that whether, you know, they are ready for this or not. So as the circumstances happens, Naradji, one of his role is to bring together circumstances to help God's work. So he goes and tells all the three great goddesses that, you know what, they are all saying, you know, where on earth can you find such love or such, you know, great beings like us. And he says, no, I don't think there are people on earth who have such a love, with such a devotion that it's not found anywhere in the world. All the three worlds. So they say, what do you mean? They are stung with jealousy. Now you see, Anusuya is without jealousy. So they want to test. And so all the three gods, Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, they go and they ask for eating some meal, and she welcomes them. Come. Those were not days when people were full of suspicion and, you know, they checked your Aadhaar card and all this. If somebody came to eat, please come, have food. Actually, I have also seen that era. So it's so beautiful, you know, that we didn't think that, you know, he may be a thief, he may be what. When people came to the house, you were welcome, you were fed. Brahman Devta, that's how, you know, they were called. So they say, no, but we have one condition. You have agreed to feed us, but we want you to be without any clothes. And, you know, then you have to feed us, making us sit on your lap. Now, it's a strange request. But she smiles. Anusuya smiles. It's okay. No problem. I'll just come back. I'll change and come. And as she comes, she completely transforms these three gods into little babies, children. And he says, since you are my children, I don't need to feed you. I'll feed you my breast milk. Now you see the catch. Now all three drink her breast milk and then they go to sleep. Now she has become their default mother. This is what she was aspiring for. So how the circumstances conspire. Meanwhile, the three goddesses, they are worried. They say, Narad, where did you send them? You have sent them. So they come to earth, zero in their own divine GPS and go there and ask, have three of these people come? He says, yes. Where are they? He said, they are sleeping. You can go and pick up, recognize and pick them up. And like babies, they are sleeping. And so they, of course, understand that what is the power of human love. And then as a result, they give a boon that all three of us will be born as once in one single being. So that is the background of Dattatreya's birth. And he is a very interesting sage. He is regarded as the Adi Guru because he had no physical guru. But the beauty is that he didn't want people to... He's shown with three faces, obviously, and with a cow. And So because he didn't want people to come near him and start pestering, so he would create illusion, he'd moving around with a young pretty girl or things like that. You know, people think, oh, he has lost his way. But he was fully conscious person. He is regarded as one of the greatest. But he would create that impression because he didn't want to do show and sham. So completely in a very nonchalant way, but a tapasvi inside. And as the story goes, that when he's asked that how did he learn, how did he get the jnana? So see, the story is so interesting. He says, I have 24 gurus. 24 gurus? He says, yes, everything from nature I have learned. So he learned from the earth to remain stable and steadfast, to endure. So all the elements he learns. He learns from the breeze to pass through everything and carry everything. Don't worry, don't stay, get stuck somewhere. It moves. He learned from water to purify everything. Whatever impurity comes, it purifies it. And he learned from Agni that when you concentrate, you grow in light, you grow in force. Concentration gives the power of growing in light and force. And then he learned from the sky, remain impassive, detached, even though you are watching everything. He learned from the sun that gave everything to the creation, but demand nothing in return. See how mother has spoken about these things in her own way. When she speaks about learn from a flower, be like a flower. She speaks about be like a river. They are the same thing she is speaking. He learned from the moon that it waxes and wanes like the cycles, but it keeps its basic identity. Even when everything is eclipsed, it is still the moon. Use the word new moon. We don't say moon has vanished. So even if you go through darkness or light, stay steadfast and remember who you are. So that's what he learns from the moon. He learned from a harlot that if you occupy yourself, engage with excessive passions, one day all these things will leave you because you will get exhausted. You will stop enjoying them. What a, you know, one of the secrets that he gives, that I learned from a harlot. Then he learns from a bumblebee to gather all the best from every other place. And he learned from the fish, don't take a bait. And he learned from the bird. And it's a wonderful description. If you read the 24 gurus of Dattatreya, it's amazing. So basically, the guru is within us. The guru is everywhere. But who learns? Who is a seeker? Who wants to learn? He will learn from anywhere. This is a similar story in Satyakam Javali, which is from the Chandogya Upanishad, where Satyakam is sent by his guru, Gautam Rishi, to the forest. That come back when the 100 cows have grown into 400. So his wife says, what do you mean? He has come to you for Brahmagyana. He says, don't worry. So he goes there and he comes back fully shining. And he says, how did you get the jnana? He says, the well, he fell in the well and the well, the fire spoke, the cow spoke, everybody spoke. So here the emphasis is that if you are a seeker, you may be anywhere in the world and you will learn because the master is everywhere. If you are not a seeker, you may be sitting close to the master, but learn nothing. Because you are only observing the externalities. That's why Shivindu once semi-humorously remarked, when someone says, I believe people who are very near you, they will be the first ones to get transformed. Shivindu humorously remarked, in that case, this little, there was this ink dryer, those days, no? This wooden piece on my table will be the first to be transformed in that case. So it was a very clear remark that it is aspiration, the seeking, which opens the door. So this is the story of Dattatreya, many other beautiful stories about him. But now we come to the two main characters of Srimad Bhagavat Puran, that is Rishi Vyas and Sage Narad. So the scene in book one takes us to the conversation. So Shaunak Rishi asks Sudji that... what really transpired between Vyas Rishi and Narad Muni? Please tell us that. So now Vyas Rishi, as we know, is the son of another great Rishi, with which is very interesting story, and it breaks all our mental ideas and formations. Just if you read the story, those who have read it can never remain rigid and, you know, that kind of stuck in very narrow understanding of life. So Parashar Rishi, Parashar Muni actually, he is credited by with composing two interesting literature. One is Vishnu Puran, and the second is Parashar Smriti, which is like, you know, Manu Smriti. So yeah, Parashar Smriti, which is about the laws and regulations of the society. So Parashar's Rishi is the father of Vedavyas. So he himself is the son of. Now this is a human story, like how these rishis, what they were like. We portray Rishi as somebody who is cut off, sitting aloof in the forest, having a big beard and, you know, wearing a khaddar or whatever, you know, ochre color. No. Nowhere it is mentioned that they were wearing this kind of colored dress and sitting in the forest. Now Vasishtha Rishi has his son Parashar, and there are other children. So obviously he was not only married, he was married to Arundhati, and he had children, so obviously they were being looked after. So as it happens that his son, Vasishtha Rishi's son, Shakti Muni, and his wife, Adrashya something. So they are married, and while the baby is in the womb, Parashar Rishi, there is an attack, and in the attack, the father dies. It's a very tragic story. And when his father, Shakti Muni, dies because the king has, you know, becomes like a demonic, that story is not so important. But anyways, it is important, but that way there are too many stories we'll get into. So then Parashar is born, and he develops that thing that people who are arrogant and proud, you know. So he has a natural fondness for people who come from humble origins. He likes them because it was a king with whom his father had a tiff. And then the king became a monster because he mistreated his father. So anyways, so then Parashar Rishi also fights with these kind of demonic kings. And in one of them, his ashram is attacked and he becomes lame. So he's also regarded as Pangu Muni. So he's one of those Rishi who were also kind of, you know, had the warrior sense within him. So meanwhile, when this king kills not only his father, he kills all the children of Vasishtha. And Vasishtha goes into depression. To see the real life events of a great Rishi. And he goes into depression so much that he loses all interest in life. At one point, he wants to jump into the river Vipasha. Actually, she was not known as river Vipasha. So see, he jumps, tying a stone to himself that, but Vipassa knows who he is. See the difference between your outer action and your inner consciousness. So the river is scared. She cuts away his bonds by the tej, the flow. That's how her name comes, Vipassa, one who breaks the bond. Of course, the story is symbolic also. So he goes through a state of Vishad Yoga. So when you go into an extreme intensity of something, if you really go deep down into it, if you can endure that passage, you end up discovering a point of light. This is the story. It's not just about... Now, this is described in two places. One is in the poem Love and Death, where the Ruru's grief ultimately opens a door inside, and he discovers the secret of, you know, bringing his wife back to death, that power of love. And there are other stories. In fact, one place the mother describes, if you read in volume 2, what do you do when there is a great suffering? So she says this in a nutshell. If you are assailed by great suffering, she says, make it like a point of sword to go within you. What we do is we get caught up by outer things more and more. But like Rishi Vasishtha, we should go deep inside, that turn it into a point of sword to go deep, deep, deep inside till that point opens a door. And then she says, there you will find a light which no suffering or pain can cross. So if you read Vasishtha Rishi's story, it will run both ways. Outwardly, the story of a man who got depressed, who jumped into the river, his bonds were cut, and then he came out, then he heard his Bahu, which is Adrashya means unseen. She is doing some Veda mantra, tapasya is going on. This story is very interesting, fascinating. So he goes that, who is she? Then she sees he is his son's wife. And she says, you know, I am carrying your grandchild. And then she offers it to him. And he brings up the grandchild, who becomes Parasha Rishi. Now look at the naming of the stories. One is Shakti. The other is Adrishya. So he loses Shakti. Vasishtha loses his will, his strength. But deep inside, unseen, there is something which is going on. Like as the mother says, even if you are in intense darkness, keep taking the name. And that's what we will see several times. It will come in different ways. And then suddenly this part which was going on through all this pain, despite all this pain, there is an offspring. Offspring in the Vedic lore, invariably, it applies for both. It's a child as well as a power which is born to us, a new possibility. So that's Parasha Rishi, who comes like that. And his, because he had that fondness for the, what is called as the depressed classes. So one day he is going on a boat, and who is, see how destiny is turned. Like Sri Aurobindo in Ilion at one place describes the charioteer of Achilles. He's an old man, probably in 80s, shaky limbs. He says, old and fragile, feeble and weak, he carried in his hands the destiny of a nation. Because he's taking Achilles' message. So we see that Satyavati, who is a fisherman's daughter, and obviously full of the smell of fish and all that, she is carrying him across the river. And Parasha Rishi says that, I would want to have a child from you. Now, who is this Satyavati going to become? She is going to become the great empress of the Kuru clan. And that moment is important. So she says, okay, but I also want something from you. So what is it that you want? I'm full of this fishy smell. I don't like it. Can you do something about it? He says, okay. Henceforth, you will have a fragrance which will always remain. And that's how, you know, King Shantanu was attracted towards her. So she has a child, and that child becomes Vedavyas. So every year, Parashar Rishi will come and meet her. And this child grew, and then eventually, of course, he was taken by Parasha Rishi, and he grew into the legendary Vedvyas, who is one of the incarnations, Anshavatar of none else but Krishna himself. Just imagine, look at this story. What kind of all norms, forms stand here? And so Vyas grows up in the island, and he has composed the, he is the one who is credited by sectioning the Vedas. We often say that, how many Vedas are there? Standard answer is 4 Vedas. Actually, it is not exactly true in this sense that Vedas are record of experiences of all these rishis. And they were never meant to be finished, because new experiences will come, new realizations will come. But Vyas codified them. So he has codified. So he has sectioned them into, those 4 standard 4 Vedas. He gave the task to each of his disciples, one of them Shukdev, and as we know, Shukdev is his own son. And despite doing all this, he is attached to his son. When his son wants to go on renunciation, he says, I can't live without you, it's so difficult. See, there is very human aspect. And then as his son goes, his son shows him what really detachment is. And it's a very touching story that both of them are going on a bridge, and there are women who are taking bath. So as Vyas Rishi is going, all these women adjust their clothes because they are taking bath on the ghats and they are not, properly dressed. But as Shukdev goes, they do nothing. So Vyas Rishi notices this and says, how come? He says, no, there is in you a vibration of a kind which differentiates between a girl and a boy. Can we imagine how futuristic that vision is? And therefore, we respond to that vibration, and we felt in you a man like, see, mother is saying, why can't you forget that you are boys and girls? She has been saying this. But Shukdev has no such feeling that there is a boy and a girl. So his presence doesn't create any kind of stir within us. So that's the Sukhdev whom he had first transmitted. We spoke about it. So he has codified the Vedas. Then he realized that Vedas are not easy for the common man. How will people who are not so much well versed with Sanskrit, the grammar and all this, understand the Vedas? So he wanted to do something for the common man. So he wrote the Mahabharata. Mahabharata is regarded as the fifth Veda. Because he gave the essence of the Vedas and the Dharma, but in the Mahabharata, so that common man can connect. So it was meant to carry the truth down the generations, which we know it has done admirably well. But he is not happy after all this. So he asked Narad. They meet on the banks of River Saraswati. The same River Saraswati which has been so much subject of needless controversy, based on which people made all kinds of, you know, invasion theory and all. All this has been debunked and we need not go into it. But Saraswati River has been found both by the NASA satellites as well as our ISRO satellites, that she flows from the Kashmir regions through the what is today Punjab, Haryana, Rajasthan, down to Gujarat and would drain into the Arabian Sea. The image that she actually went underground around 4,000 years back, which is, if you take the age of Mahabharata, roughly 4,500 years back. So it is, or 5,000 years back. So you see, it collates with that time. Because this story is soon after the Mahabharata. So he is, so it in fact confirms that there was nothing like Aryan invasion. And can you imagine that what kind of ingenious, devious methods people wanted to divide created? So what they said is, there is no river Saraswati. So all mention of Saraswati in the Rig Veda and subsequently there is no Saraswati. So where is Saraswati? In Iran there is a river called Satsati. So that is the original river. There are many such things they created and people still unfortunately believe. But fortunately much of evidence today is exactly what Swami Vivekananda and Sri Aurobindo said long back, that this is a myth of Aryan invasion. There is nothing like that. People, original inhabitants of this place were Aryans. Dravid part was only those who were living in the land locked by three sides by water. Dravida. So that's how it came. So he's taking a stroll and he said, Narad, what is it that I am missing? I'm missing something. So Narad says, I know what you're missing. Because Narad had gone through this phase. So he says, what is it that I'm missing? Can you pinpoint? He says, yes. He says, you have written so many things. But you know what you have not mentioned? You have not mentioned the glory of the Lord. So, until you mention the glory of the Lord, how are you going to? He says, you are well-versed, you are a tapasvi. You can understand, you can realize, if you stretch your experience further, you will reach that point where the Lord will reveal himself to you. But you have stopped there. So, you have not gone to the ultimate truth, ultimate reality. So, that's why you are unhappy. Still, and you need to discover the glory of the Lord and write it. So then there is a little conversation and there he says, okay, can you tell me how did you discover the glory of the Lord? That's another very interesting story. So as I said, Narad is involutionary being. So, but he wants to taste what is love for the divine. These beings don't know who are in those worlds. So Narad is Brahma's Manasputra. So he has to come on earth to understand what is the bhakti, what is this, is unique to humans. You'll not find that devatas are doing engaged in tapasya or engaged in bhakti. They are having powers. They bless the bhaktas. You'll only see Shiva worshipping Rama, because when there is a human being, human body, the Lord takes it, is something wonderful. So Narad wants to taste bhakti. It's his special mission. He doesn't know. There is a very interesting aside to this story. Anyways, he comes on earth. He says, I am born to a maid servant. Okay, all this idea about Brahmin birth and all this. So he's born to a maid servant who is serving some Brahmins who are coming and they are narrating some stories. So he's a nice boy. He takes interest in taking care of them. And he, poor little boy, you know, 4 or 5 year old boy, he asked them, can I eat what is left over from you? So they would give him. Now you see, this is a very occult truth which is being revealed here. And we'll see how it connects. So when we share a meal, when we eat somebody's half-left food, then something of that consciousness passes into us, and vice versa. This is a ceremony which was known even in mystic church. They've forgotten its meaning. When, you know, we are taking the blood of Christ, and, you know, then there is a ceremony where they share. Now, in Indian tradition, it's well known. The Lord tastes and passes on. The mother was actually doing it when she would do the soup ceremony. She would actually drink the soup and pass it on. And there were such disciples, so one of them remarked that, but this is unhygienic. And Sri Aurobindo had to say under his breath, brutes, and he stopped it. So it's revealed in the Bhagavad that if you eat, I've had a very interesting personal experience about it, which I can share. So I was in service of Champak Lalji for about 20 days at a particular point of time in the afternoon. So I had read all these stories. So one day he was drinking carrot juice, and suddenly he went into trance with the glass in his hand. So there was someone who was known to him a long time. So he quietly took away the glass, and a thought struck me, oh, I wish I had my chance. But I am not a very assertive kind of person, so he has taken away. So I said, it's okay. And he was about to drink. Champak Lalji suddenly comes out of his trance, looks at this man. He has already turned his back. He's about to drink it. And he says, He was not speaking. And he made such a leonine sound that he suddenly... And Champak Lalji tells him by the finger. He says, what? You don't drink. He says, what do I do? He said in Gujarati. Champak Lalji says, He asks, give it to him. He said, I can't imagine. So there are many such profound truths we don't know. You know that eat anything, that these are things which are very occult truths. So he used to just do that. There are many stories like that, even in the Mahabharata. Anyways, so he eats those things which are left over. And he would engage in service. Whose service? These fellows who were well-versed, learned people. Very nice. He said they used to tell me stories, and I used to be very fond of it. So when they were staying for 3 months, during rains they would come and stay in some house, then they would go. So then they would, while they were leaving, they liked him very much. So they told him how to meet the Lord and what is meant by love of the Lord. He says, from there I learned. Then Vyas is eager. He said, then what happened? So he says, then as it happened that I was a little child, and my mother had to look after everything because, you know, she was the only earning member. Father had died. See, it's very human-like narration. And my mom had to do everything, sacrifice everything for me. Then one day she went to bring water, and she was bit by a snake, and then she died. How old is Narad? 5 or 6 years old. So Narad is describing what was his reaction. Narad says, why blame the serpent? And why blame destiny? Everything that happens, I have learned. See, this is called practicing what you have learned. Is by the will of Sri Hari. Surely the Lord has his leela. There must be a reason why this has happened. So he chants the name and goes on. He says, no, but now he can't. So he is living wherever he goes, little boy, wherever he gets something, he eats. He never once has any complaint. Because that's how he has imbibed the knowledge right into the stuff of his being. Imagine a 5 year, 6 year old boy suddenly struck by tragedy that mother dies accidentally. But he takes it that, well, in a way, Lord has freed me. He says he was very attached to me. He describes all this. And I was also very attached to her. So he takes it like a grace and a blessing. So he goes. I mean, great sadhaks would not be able to. And then he goes and he is trying all kinds of things, but he is again not so happy. And that's when he meets... He goes to a forest, and then in the forest, he is sitting. There is a very, again, interesting story. And he is all around, all kinds of jackals, snakes. He's like frightened forest. But he sits and thinks about the Lord. He says, oh, this is such a beautiful thing to think about the Lord. And the Lord appears. There are two, three places where there is a marvelous description of the vision of the divine. I mean, other than Sri Aurobindo. Sri Aurobindo's description is amazing, beyond anything anywhere in Savitri where he describes. And so one of them is Narad's vision, another is Prahlad's vision of the Lord. Prahlad's vision is when he is being thrown from the cliff. So he has a vision, he says, every nerve of mine was filled with delight, I forgot everything. But then he says, after a while the vision withdrew. And now my situation was much worse, he describes. Because after tasting it, what does he do? How does he live without it? So he wants to have it again. He tries everything, but it doesn't happen. See, it doesn't come with. That's what the Upanishad says. Nayam atma pravachanena medhana bahuna shrutena yamaveshe vranute tena labhyastasheshe atma vivranute tanuswam. When the Lord chooses, then he reveals. So he tries and tries so many things he cannot. So he is very disturbed now. Then he hears the voice and he describes, I didn't see the form, which is the earlier, but something next, which is the voice. We'll see in Savitri toward the end. Savitri hears the voice when she takes the boon. In several places we see. So voice is the divine taking form. Voice nada, which is the first form. So is the divine taking a form of sound and entering. So the voice says, you will not get this darshan again in this life. He says, how do I live? He says, you then he instructs him that you will find the way, don't worry. This was given to you as a promise. It connects now, no? So many of us, we get a promise. After the promise, you prepare you. You can't start, I want this and start doing a lot of meditation. No, you have to now prepare. So how does he prepare? Again, he has been shown a path of devotion and service. So he says, everywhere I would wander all over the world, whatever his world was, and you know, sing the glories of the Lord, chant the names of the Lord, waiting that one day the Lord will show him up. But he has told that in this life you are not going to see this form again. But he wanted to experience bhakti. So he experiences all this. In the course, two interesting incidents happen. One is with regard to the Sanat Kumar who come and show him the path. And Sanat Kumar have written in Sanat Sujatya something which Sri Aurobindo quotes in one of his essays, Yoga and Its Object, that there are four aids to the sadhana. This is exactly what Sanat Kumar reveals to Narad. We know the four aids. So you have the scripture, you have the master, and you have the your own zeal and you have time. So Sanat Kumar asks him, what? He says, I know so much, everything it seems, but I am not happy. Even though Lord has assured me, he has told me, I have seen. He says, do you know that knowing which all else can be known? He says, no. That's how he instructs him into Brahma Vidya. And then things don't stop there, because Narad has come to earthly life. He wants to taste all the possibilities. So he has heard about King Janak. He is a great rishi, yogi. So he says, let me go and see what kind of yogi he is. But when he goes, he sees there's music going on. He's sitting on a throne. Dancing is going on. In modern parlance, television is going on. And he is taking some nice, whatever, sharbat is being served. And there are people who are massaging his legs. So he's confused. He says, have I come to the right place? So Janak understands his dilemma. In fact, Narad asks him, how come they say that you are a yogi? You are a realized person. He smiles. He says, you rest today. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Whether I am realized or not. Next day, Narad is told that you carry a pot of milk. Why don't you enjoy the city? Then we'll sit and discuss about it. He says, okay. So he says, carry a pot of milk or oil on the head. But Narad, only one condition. Enjoy the city, but make sure that nothing falls. Not a drop, huh? Narad is all concentrated. He has to prove that he is a great yogi. So he's concentrated. Milk doesn't fall. But he is visibly frustrated. When Janak asks him, what did you see? He says, see? Are you joking? Kidding? What could I see? My whole concentration was on the pot. Now he wants to test King Janak. He says, can you do it? He says, try. He goes with that pot all through the city. Not a drop falls, and he describes everything that happened. He goes through. So he gave the example of what it means to be perfectly detached in all the action of the world. And Sri Aurobindo says that this is the kind which we want in the future. And one of the aphorisms where he says, Vivekananda exalting sannyas said that there is only one Janak. And then he corrects. He says, no, there is not one Janak. There is a lineage of Janak. Janak is a lineage. Janak literally means father. They were married. They had progeny. And so, there is a very interesting aphorism of Sri Aurobindo which sums up this story. So, one of the aphorisms is that Narad, seeing the actions of Janak, even Narad, the divine sage, mistook him to be a libertine and engrossed in material life. But he couldn't understand this. So the person asks, devotee or disciple asks mother, mother, how could Narad not understand it? Mother says, because he is an involutionary being. He is a demigod. So he doesn't have that. This is this kind of a thing where you can engage with life and yet be completely focused on the Lord is possible only to those who have the psychic being. So Narad couldn't understand this. But anyways, he saw the possibility. And then finally he says that I kept on remembering the Lord. And one day death came as lightning comes, he describes, which reveals and finishes. There's a line in Savitri, in a moment shorter than death. No, there's another line. He bore the stroke of that which slays and saves. So it was literally the Lord coming to take him. His body couldn't take it. It shattered. If you can bear that pressure, that's why the Lord had said, I will not come again. He couldn't have borne it. But the day he came, but in Savitri it is described, he bore the stroke of that which slays and saves. So Narad dies, his body. He says, instantly I left the body and the Lord took me along with him. And he gave me a body which is appropriate to his own world. So there are different bodies. This is called a Chinmay Dehi. If you go through the Vaishnava literature, they call this a Chinmay Dehi. So there are bodies. People ask Sri Aurobindo, is this the same body you are forming? He says, no, that's a body valid for other worlds, not for this. We want this body to be transformed into a fully conscious luminous body. So that's a luminous conscious body. And then thenceforth he is always with the Lord. So he gets the joy of Salokya Mukti. He understands what bhakti is, because of which he had taken a human birth as an involutionary being. And he continues to help people. There are beings like that. Several stories of Narad subsequently. So this is how Narad reveals his own truth to Vyas. So then the Rishi asked, what did Shaunak Rishi ask Sutji? Then what did Vyas Rishi do after this? If you read the narrative, it's very beautiful, and running through forest, description of rivers, flora and fauna. It's like not a disconnected philosophy. Everything, it includes all the creatures around. So he says, then he sat on the banks of river Saraswati and he meditated upon the Lord. And as he meditated upon the Lord revealed himself to him and he started writing the Bhagavad. And with that, the story comes back to the original. So Shaunak asks, by the way, what happened? Soon after Duryodhan's death, Krishna wanted to leave, no? He says, yes, Krishna was to leave because his mission, Mahabharata, was over. So he wants to leave, and that's one night when everybody was there. So Ashwatthama is alive and he comes at night. It's very one of the first stories that comes is the son of Drona punished. It's a very interesting story. So he comes at night and kills all the five children who were sleeping. They were children of Draupadi, through each of the five ones. And they're all killed. So he thought they are Pandavas, and he mistook the brother Drishtadyumna for Krishna, and he killed all of them. And then he runs away. When they come, they are in distress. Draupadi is weeping. And Arjun takes a vow that I am going to get his head. And he goes after him. Now when he goes after him, and Ashwathama runs in his chariot, because he knows now what is going to, I am going to face. And then when he sees he has no choice, he fires Brahmastra. And this is a description of Brahmastra. And when we see, read about the nuclear holocaust that took place in Hiroshima, you'll see a similar description, as if many suns have arisen in the sky. So Brahmastra is a deadly, from the description it's a nuclear weapon. Somebody may say, is it possible to have it on an arrow tip? But Pavitrada had found the formula, and he had told the mother, that mother, I have found the formula that we can have a nuclear reaction on a arrow tip, on a small tip. She said, you know it, I know it, and now you forget about it. There are possibilities which we don't know. So he just was invoking the power of the Brahmastra, and light had started. And then Arjun is praying to Sri Krishna. What do I do? Do I have an option except firing another Brahmastra? He says, yes, you have to fire, because only Brahmastra can neutralize a Brahmastra. And naturally now when there are two Brahmastra, it is devastating. So it is not yet started. It is just the, as they say, before a rocket is launched, you will see a lot of sound and energy and fire being pushed. That kind of a situation is coming up. And then Sri Krishna asks Arjun to pull back both of them. So he pulls back both of them. It's a whole science which we have forgotten, or rather we have been made to forget. So all this was pulled back, and he catches Ashwathama and brings. Now this is very interesting part to this story. So who is Ashwathama? He is his guru's son. So Sri Krishna tells him immediately, you kill him. He says, I'm hesitating. Hesitating because, see, look at the nobility. He says, my children have been killed. But you know, he is our guru's son. He says, don't worry about it. He has done something. And then Krishna says, there are only seven conditions in which you are not supposed to kill as a Kshatriya. Noble Kshatriya will not kill a sleeping person, a child, a woman, a drugged person, unconscious person. So he will not do it among those things. But this fellow has done a heinous crime. He should kill him. But he is not able to. He says, I am conflicted. So Krishna says, actually, if you ask the dharma, it says both ways. So you have the choice. Then he goes, drags him to Draupadi and says, Draupadi, I have brought his head. You want it dead or alive? Then Draupadi also feels that, you know, he is after all your guru's child. And she says, I am lamenting. So many women are lamenting now. Now his mother Kripi, because Drona is also dead. He is her only hope. She will lament. So she is moved, shown a very compassionate character of Draupadi. She says, leave him. I don't want to see his face. Let him go. And again Krishna says, Bhimsen and Krishna, both of them say we should kill him. But then finally they decide that, okay, we'll not kill him. We'll take away his money. So already he has become powerless after doing this heinous crime. He had money from childhood. He was blessed by Shiva. That's how he was born. So without the money, he is a useless fellow. So Arjun takes the money, sets him that you go, wander in the world, whatever, you know, you are so-called immortal, you will. This doesn't come in Bhagavat actually, though he is regarded as one of the Chiranjeevis. But anyways, that's a different story. So Ashwathama goes away from there, but see Krishna's advice. This applies in modern times in a different context. This is an aphorism of Sri Aurobindo. He who does not slay when God bids him does to the world an incalculable harm. And then there is another aphorism which is complementary. But first be sure that it is God who has commanded you. So they don't kill him. What does this fellow do? He fires Brahmastra again. Directed toward the womb of Uttara, who is Abhimanyu's wife. He is so much enraged. He wants to make sure that even the progeny, there is no progeny left of the Pandavas. And he does that. And then Uttara comes running. She prays for help. And Shri Krishna, with his light, his chakra, Sudarshan chakra, saves them all. He takes them all under his envelope. Because nothing can go beyond the Lord's light. No weapon, nothing can be greater than the Lord's grace. So he reveals that. And so the Brahmastra has no effect. Parikshit is saved. Or rather, he dies and he is brought to life again by Shri Krishna. And then comes at the close, finally, a prayer of Kunti. So Kunti says, Lord, you are leaving us now. You know, every time we have been in distress, we have called you. And this, he recounts all the Lakshagra episode, this, that. Visibly or in some way, you have come to us. And how much we have remembered you. Every time we have been distressed, you have come to us. And then she says, please give me this sufferings again and again. Because through these, I had the good fortune of seeing your manifestation and your Leela and your grace. This famous as Kunti's prayer. Not that give me suffering so that I can remember you. See, because of this, we have witnessed which we had never witnessed. We never imagined that such is your Leela. Because people say you are just son of Devaki. They have all kinds of stories about you. But we have seen you as the divine incarnate acting upon all of us. So please give us these sufferings again so that we can again and again experience the joy of your manifestation. And then she says, and as for myself, I have one thing more to ask. You know, after seeing you and after you leave, I can't live in this world. And yet I have to do whatever duties I have to do. Grant that all my ties of affection are cut. Cut them asunder, O Lord. Free me from all these ties of attachment. And Sri Krishna says simply, so be it. Climbs into the chariot and goes. We'll continue next Tuesday. Thank you. Jai Ma.
सबको अशेष अशेष प्रज्ञा था जय
जय मां